Welcome to the Metapod Podcast, a Pokemon podcast that revolves around the evolving meta. It feels like for me forever since we've done the podcast. And Sean, I'll tell you, when I said that this was new season, new me, it is the season has started way differently than I thought. How's your week been?
Oh, my week has been, it's been great, actually. I've played a little bit of Pokemon on Sunday. Yeah. I went to a league challenge and got absolutely walloped. I brought Chen Pao, and I'm just going to tell the listeners right now, I thought I was onto something, and maybe I am, and I got bad matchups, but I put Chen Pao with Path to the Peak.
No.
See, I mean, I will say, I never felt like the Path to the Peak mattered. Like, meaning, like, it was never an issue for me. Like, when it was down, the weird thing, though, was I had weird matchups. Like, two matches that I won, I would say, relatively easily, but I will also say that, like, they weren't the most, like, meta of decks that I was playing against. They were, like, you know, broadly more casual players, let's say, right?
Yes.
So, like, I can't really put too much weight
locals,
on that. Right.
You know.
But the other two matches I lost. And one of them, I was playing against Sebastian. I cannot remember his last name for the life of me, but he got second at Worlds last year in the seniors division.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he's relatively local, and he just showed up. He's trying to get all of his points for Worlds. So he was playing Sablezard. So
okay.
That's a horrific matchup for any kind of Chen Pao deck. I'm just going to tell you right now. And then, but he also plays four Path to the Peak. So, like, I played a couple of non-meta decks, and then I played a deck that plays four paths, so my path doesn't even matter. It didn't hurt me, actually. Like, I didn't feel like, oh, their path is stopping me. Like, I just, it didn't matter. And then the next game was a Lost Box Tina, and I lost that one. I don't think the path mattered again, but...
Lost Tina plays path. They like
Lost Tina plays path, and I'm like, yep. I'm sitting here, like, I made a meta call... I was, like, expecting Zard. I was expecting I don't even know what. And I did not get it.
This is like we said the other week. Don't metagame for your local meta. Just play whatever you feel like you do best with. Or at least that's my opinion. You know, take it with a grain of salt.
You're right, Jake. I don't know. I was trying something out. I was like, oh, nobody will expect the path.
You will have played more Pokemon than me for a while now, because the Metapod might have some weird stuff lately, because I, for anyone who doesn't know, I just accepted a job in Las Vegas. So in the next month, I'm going to have to try to move from the middle of Kentucky to Las Vegas. And that's going to be crazy, but it'll be a lot of fun. It's a good job, and I'm excited about it. But yeah, that's my big change, and that's why I haven't played Pokemon lately.
Yeah. I mean, hey, look, you're going to be going from gambling on a children's card game to gambling in real life. It's going to be great.
No, I can't do that. Like, I've never been in a casino before or anything. Like, I'm 26 years old. I've never been in a casino. I've never really had interest in being in a casino. Like, yeah. I'm sure I've had the opportunity to, but I just haven't. And, you know, I'm going to be going to a local, you know, card shop that's not 90 minutes away.
I know.
I think around where I'm working, Dark Side Games, where like Josh Hatter is, and like one of the more popular Las Vegas shops, that's like 20 minutes away from where I work. So
Vegas is like it's a, you know, relatively large city, and they have, from what I understand, like there's like a decent card game scene there. So yeah. I think that'll be a really big upgrade for you, Jake. I'm excited for you.
I just want a place that's not 90 minutes of driving. And Pokemon or card games did not factor into my decision at all. It was like the cherry on top, you know.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that I'm good enough to just have that influence my choices. But no, it's very expensive to live in Vegas. But just because I haven't been playing Pokemon card games doesn't mean that we still don't talk about the news, because there's plenty of news to talk about, Sean. But you first want to do the review for the day.
I know. I have the review for the day. So this one comes from an unlikely place. We actually got an email from a really lovely listener.
Yes, we do just, check the email.
We do. I will just say your first name. I don't know if you even meant for much of this to be out in the public sphere, but I'm going to read a small portion of the email. It's from Michael. One of the things he said was, a couple of months ago, I decided that I really needed to find a hobby to get me out of the house and decided to get into the Pokemon TCG. I found your podcast and have been thoroughly enjoying it each week. I look forward to each new episode. It's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Michael, for that wonderful review in there. And you can leave a review too, whether it's by email. If you want to send it by email, we don't judge you for that. If you want to leave a tweet reply or X reply or whatever it's called,
thread, something like that.
Yeah. YouTube comments, Spotify ratings, Apple reviews. I think I've got it all. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else you can do it, but don't worry, send us a Pinterest post.
No, don't.
Yeah, and send us some interests. Send us some interests that you may have, because there may be some things after I move that get implemented that you can maybe showcase your love of the Metapod. But anyway, Sean, we got to talk about the news that is coming up. So let's start off first. We have always talked about the store promos that come up through places like GameStop and things like that. And there's been a little bit of delay, as it says on PokeBeach.com, but Best Buys are officially getting the Obsidian Flames Espeon promo. So if you have a Best Buy near you, go ahead, check that out. This one is kind of nice because in comparison to the GameStop Umbreon, they have two different stamps. The GameStop one has a GameStop stamp, and the Espeon one, though, has an Obsidian Flames stamp. It's not a Best Buy stamp. It's just an Obsidian Flames stamp.
Yeah, the Best Buy one is classy. And then the GameStop one is, we have a promo stamp at home stamp.
It's a black background with, like, you know, Umbreon, which is yellow and black, and there's some dark blue in there and stuff. And then all of a sudden there's this bright red word GameStop. No, like, background, black text, you know, shadow or anything like that. Just really, it really feels like, you know, can I copy your homework? Yeah, but don't make it look like you cheated, kind of thing.
I will say, Jake, the fact that it's an Espeon and Umbreon, though, I'll give them that. People love the evolutions, and so whomever negotiated for these two Pokemon, shout out to you. It's better than the what's the centipede, the fire.
Oh, Senescorch.
It's better than Senescorch.
That we saw that didn't even have a stamp or reverse holo pattern. Yeah. I will never forget that Senescorch. Yeah.
No one will. We won't let them. Oh.
But in order to get these promos, you do have to spend $15 to Pokemon TCG purchases in order to get the promo. This is the first time that we got two different promos for a set promotion. So very exciting. Again, Espeon and Umbreon, a pair, makes sense. And I don't know about you, but I'm gonna go to the Best Buy one.
Yeah, the Best Buy one looking good. They did my boy Umbreon dirty, but Best Buy, you're good.
It is what it is. But if maybe that stuff doesn't interest you, then maybe the next new main set will, Sean. We got a lot of product images and things like that for our November 3rd release set, Paradox Rift. I think we talked a little bit about this about a month ago, like when it was announced more at Worlds, I think, during the World Championships and stuff. So in this product lineup, you know, they've got a whole bunch of images and things like that of the packs, the pack arts, man, that's tough to say, look really good. So does the box. You know, you've got the booster bundle boxes and all the blister lane packs, things like that. I'm curious, on the blister lane pack, the one pack with the pine cone and the Sinistee, which, by the way, the Sinistee looks real good. Love that card art. Is the Pikachu, have we seen that coin before?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong, but it looks like a Pikachu coin I've seen before, but I don't know. They all kind of blend together at this point, Jake.
I am not 100%, but it is exciting to see the new set coming here soon. Elite trainer boxes as well are going to feature Roaring Moon on the packaging with a Screamtail promo inside. Sean, can you tell me which Paradox Pokemon is Screamtail?
There's a Pokemon that starts with an S that had a colorless V and VMAX that was good a while back that did damage to the bench. Why do I know so much about this card but not the name?
Talking about like which Pokemon it was, not necessarily the card that was revealed with it. I don't know what to tell you about the card that you're thinking of.
I'm on the Elite Trainer box, right?
Yeah.
And then the Screamtail is the Pokemon that's on it, right?
No, that's Roaring Moon, I think. The Salamence-looking thing?
Oh, Salamence. That was the word I was thinking of. Oh, you were asking what Pokemon is Screamtail a Paradox
of? Yeah, what Pokemon
is
Screamtail? Yeah.
I'd have to look at it.
Do you know? I'm like 90% sure I know what the right answer is, by the way.
I'm looking here. Hold on. I got to go to the actual card and look at Screamtail. Oh, that's
I'm pretty
Diamond.
Sure it is. Yeah, I know what you're saying. This is one of the best ancient trade cards, I feel like.
Is this either Clefairy or Cleffa and Mawile?
No, it's Jigglypuff.
It's Jigglypuff. It's one of the round ones.
What?
It's one of the
what?
Pink, it's one of the pink round ones.
Look for the images? Aren't you a Gen 1-er?
Yeah, I am. But like, I always get Clefairy and Jigglypuff confused. But okay, fine. It's Jigglypuff, and I guess it's not Mawile in the back, is it? What is that? What's the back part?
The back of the card? What are you referring to the back of?
So I guess, is Screamtail meant to be an old school Jigglypuff, or is it meant to be...
Yeah, it's just meant to be like a prehistoric Jigglypuff.
Oh, I thought... You know? For some reason, the little headpiece thing on Screamtail reminds me of... You know,
yeah,
like...
So...
Yeah.
The Paradox Pokemon, the ancient Pokemon, are just basically like dinosaur versions of Pokemon. Then the future Pokemon are just like future versions of, like, Iron Bundle is the future version of Delibird.
Yeah.
As the process of evolution goes on.
Oh, that's fair. I guess it's a digital.
I feel like I asked you a question but didn't clarify enough about well, what I was talking
I don't know.
About.
The Screamtail does look like kind of a jumble of two parts of Pokemon, but
I'll
yes.
give you that, yeah.
And then I know that Paradox Rift does have Paradox Pokemon that are jumbles of things, right? Like the Salamence one is like the Salamence and something else.
I was just going to say it's just only Salamence. It's just an ancient
Salamence?
Version. It's just a dinosaur version of the bird.
But wasn't there a Pokemon revealed that was like half, I don't know, Girafarig, half something else, half like... Raikou?
Are you talking about Raikou? Yeah. Its own Paradox Pokemon.
Okay. Look, I see that. I read nothing, Jake. And I see that, and I think to myself, oh, okay. So they're just doing... The reason they're Paradox Pokemon is they just took two Pokemon and smashed them together in funny ways.
I mean, maybe. I mean, Raikou, in my opinion, is one of my least favorite Pokemon of all time now. I think he looks so goofy and so bad. But in like the best way possible. But anyway, Sean, there's going to be two different versions of the Elite Trainer Box. One of Roaring Moon and then the other of Iron Valiant. So similar to how we had like Rapid Strike and Single Strike Urshifu, right? Now that we have these like two different forms of Pokemon, you know, we're going to go back to this like two different like sets or designs in a single set, which I really, really like. They get their own sleeves. They get their own like a Elite Trainer Box art and things like that, own dice as well. So very, very cool in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see which one because I don't know if battle styles like in the past, I can't remember if the battle styles ones came with a promo card that was playable, but for these...
No, they did not. They did not come with a promo card. I think promo cards started coming back in Elite Trainer boxes consistently in main sets at Scarlet and Violet with the Maridon and the Caridon.
Yeah, and that's also because they upped the price of packs, so they're just trying to give you a little bit more. I will be interested to see if the... I assume these boxes will contain the future Pokemon that is in the Paradox and the ancient Pokemon that's in the other.
Yes, so we do know that the Salamence-looking one, the Roaring Moon, it will have a Screamtail promo inside the Jigglypuff, Clefairy, whatever you want to call it, Sean.
Yes, yes. But,
and then the and then the Iron Valiant or the Gallade Gardevoir kind of mix Pokemon, that is going to be with an Iron Bundle promo or the Delibird one. So I will be getting the Delibird. I love Delibird. I love that guy. He's so good. But the Screamtail is going to be, we'll talk about more when that set is more releasing and stuff like that in the different cards. But Screamtail is going to be one that I think is going to be included in decks like Gardevoir and stuff like that. So that might be one of the more playable ones out of them all.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if people, you know, if there's a preferred bundle, but I like the art on both of them. Like the colors that they chose, really vibrant. Like one of them is basically watermelon colored and the other one is like this bright yellow and light blue. It's, I don't know, it's some dope colors.
It's like very grabbing colors. Like you notice it right away. Like you see in the Iron Valiant one, you see like the pink, the bright pink in there, but because it's a huge contrast to the green, which is really, really nice. And then in the Roaring Moon one, you see the bright yellow of the Roaring Moon and then the light blue, baby blue background, or maybe it was a regular blue. I don't know.
Yeah, I almost wish that design that they've gone to for the Elite Trainer boxes. There's a small part of me that wishes they would bring more of that design aesthetic to the actual booster boxes. It would be a big shift for them, so in terms of their like aesthetic, but I don't know, personally this is just me, but I the longer I'm in the Pokemon world, the more and more the box design sort of starts to just blend together over time.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And none of them really feel particularly iconic. Like I think back to the Wizards of the Coast era, right? The individual box designs were pretty iconic, I feel. Not just because they were old, but because they are actually like very bold and one thing. Whereas this is kind of an amalgamation of Pokemon always. So,
yeah, because in the booster box, the flap in the front is usually just like a solid white, isn't it? Or like, you know, more of a solid color. Like the top of it is, as you can see in the images, if you look on Pokebeach, like the top of the booster box where it folds to be like your display top kind of deal when you open the box, that's like the Iron Valiant right there. But then I think the flap itself, you know, that one side is just like pure white usually.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree with you that booster boxes don't necessarily have the appeal, but I guess it makes sense because like you open a booster box and then that's it. Like it's that it doesn't have that's the true reusableness. Like I love the Obsidian Flames ETB, like with that Charmander on it. So I use it. I recently, my partner just bought me like inscription cards for my birthday, like some Etsy like inscription cards, and I put the whole deck thing like in the ETB, and it's perfect storage for it. So like, man, as long as they keep rocking the ETBs, I'm pretty happy.
In terms of what comes in Paradox Rift, honestly, it's mostly the same rundown of stuff that you've expected now for the last year or so. The main difference is this time is there will be, like we said, a new dual typing thing or by, you know, two-sided typing. Like you'll get some ancient Pokemon and then you'll get some future Pokemon, which is a mechanic that we covered after the World Championship, but basically, ancient Pokemon have specific themes of abilities, and future Pokemon have their own subcategory of themes. We don't really know much more than that. There's going to be more Terra Pokemon, all that stuff. Illustration rares are continuing. We'd love to see it. Outside of that, the one other thing I wanted to call out is that technical machines, TMs, are making a return to the Pokemon TCG as Pokemon tool cards. So those will give the Pokemon they're attached to distinct attacks. I do imagine that this is going to be limited, similar to Rapid Strike and Single Strike. You remember how they had the scrolls?
Yeah.
So my guess is there'll be ancient type TMs that only ancient Pokemon can use and future type TMs that only future Pokemon can use. hopefully these are more useful, I'll say, than the scrolls were. I don't think the scrolls really saw much play ever. So
the technical machine cards from way back when came around like Aquapolis, Sky Ridge. So it's been a long time since we've seen technical machines. But when technical machines were first around during the e-reader card era, they were an attachment, like you were saying, like Pokemon tools in there. But at the end of the turn, you discarded that machine. So we don't know if that's going to be something that continues in these cards, in these technical machines. I would be curious to find out, but I think I would like that in comparison to the scrolls, because I feel like then those technical machines are going to be more powerful. I feel like they're going to be more impactful because, you know, it's only that one turn. Like, you have to use it on that one turn that you want to attack with it because it's going to get discarded. And I don't think we have like a Lana's ordinary rod or something, or Lana's fishing rod that retrieves tool cards back, or there does is Roseanne's one card. Backup.
Roseanne's backup.
Yeah, so that supporter will be the only thing, I think, that can get those back, except maybe, like, Silene. I guess Silene can do it, too.
Yeah, but, like, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting, like, to see how powerful they are. And, like, really, I think part of it is, like, you got to compete with not only powerful Pokemon, but you also got to compete with the deck space for a Forest Seal Stone, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, it'll be cool. I think I want them to find a design space for that where it's worth playing a deck, but we will see. Basically,
it'll be interesting to see where that comes in. The English sets will be comprised of Japan's Raging Surf and October's Ancient Roar and Future Flash. So again, kind of coming out at the same time as Japan, again still staying close to their releases, which is really, really cool. Love that Pokemon is doing that kind of thing as well. But that wasn't the only thing that Pokemon has talked about lately. If you know the Metapod, and you specifically know the video version of the Metapod, especially when I was in my Indianapolis arc, which I thought about this the other day, like that was like what, 2 years, like a year, 18, 20 months ago now?
Yeah,
a while ago. And we were recording in the mornings, which we'll probably have to do again after I move to Las Vegas because of the time difference, which Sean will be ready to get his morning cup out of matcha, especially with this new Pokemon that's released. Sean, tell us about your new favorite Pokemon. I'm dubbing it.
I was excited when they announced Poltergeist. So for those of you who don't watch every animated video of Pokemon, they announced a new grass and ghost type Pokemon called Poltergeist. It's kind of like Poltegeist, except this time the tea in question is matcha, which is like green powder tea thing. For those of you who just don't know for whatever reason. And yeah, I'm a big fan of matcha personally. I've had it on the pod before. I have special bowls for it. So I saw this and I'm like, yes, this speaks to my heart. And, you know, who knows what this Pokemon's going to be like in the card game or whatever. Like, I just wanted to mention it. I just thought it was cool. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm down with this Pokemon.
It's interesting, too. And another reason that we want to talk about it, not because it's Sean's new favorite obsession and, you know, favorite Pokemon that he's going to build a deck entirely around. It has an ability in the game. It is a ghost and grass type Pokemon. So it could have like either a grass or a psychic typing when it comes into the game. It's probably going to have a little bit of both. I assume it's going to be a relatively popular Pokemon like Poltegeist. So it could have both of those different typings. It could maybe have an EX as well where it requires psychic energy, but it is a grass type, or vice versa. That could be interesting. But it has an ability named Hospitality, where it heals a small amount of its allies' HP when entering battle. So I don't think we know if it evolves from anything. So I'm curious whether it's like a basic Pokemon, or like it evolves from a Sinistee or something, or a Sinistee-esque Pokemon if it gets a regional variant type deal. If it has some sort of ability that is like heal all the HP on another Pokemon on the field, or heal 30 HP when this ability is used on all the Pokemon, right, that have damage counters on them. Some sort of, like, spread healing. I think that could be really interesting. I think that could play up against something like Sableye, right?
And also, for those of you who get deep into the design lore of this, if you notice the in the animated video, the Poltergeist is using its matcha powder to heal cracks in pottery. And I might be butchering the name, I apologize, but I'm pretty sure that that is an art form in Japan called Kintsugi. So you may see pottery, you may be familiar with certain pottery that looks like it's been fused together with like gold running through it, through the cracks. That is a technique, a traditional technique in I don't know if it comes from Japan, but it, they do it in Japan, where you actually take real gold and maybe some other chemicals, and you put pieces of pottery back together. You fill small cracks and holes. So you can see it on the Pokemon. He has Kintsugi sort of lines, but instead of gold, it's matcha. So yeah, the idea that it's a healing-based Pokemon, and it's got this reference to Kintsugi as like this traditional pottery healing technique, if you will. It's, I don't know, it's cool. Like, I'm getting deep in the lore on this one, but yeah.
It could also be something like, when you talk about the pottery and you talk about, you know, fixing or repairing pottery, you could see something like getting Pokeballs or any ball-esque cards from the discard pile or something. We know that Ball Guy, I don't think it's in standard anymore, but Ball Guy got different, you know, ball cards from the deck, and we had that Yamper that I don't know if it got it from the discard or not. There was a Yamper that had an ability that got like a Great Ball and a Pokeball or something like that. I don't know. I remember there was a Bolton deck around for a little bit that was fun, but it was never really good. But we could see something like that as well, where the card affects Pokeball cards. There's a lot of different options with this Pokemon. That's very, very cool. Very, very exciting. And we're going to give you all of our guesses, because I did guess that Level Ball was coming back after seeing the Ball Guy full art. I just want to remind everybody of that information, that I have some legitimacy when it comes to calling different things. The official Pokemon site also says that it has a resemblance to Sinistee, but it's a completely different species of Pokemon. So it's another convergent form, something like Toadstool, Wigglet, right, that are very similar, but like their own Pokemon per se. So that's something to think about. So that provides more of the opportunity for it to potentially be like a basic Pokemon that hits the field, not any like evolutions with a Sinistee-esque looking thing or something like that.
That's cool. All right, well, enough you know, about a very specific new Pokemon that's announced. Jake, I think it's time now to talk about just the overall Obsidian Flames meta, which I will point out that this will probably be one of the shortest metas that we have for a bit, because Pokemon 151 is right around the corner. It should be coming out in a few weeks, and I believe, I could be wrong, but I feel like when it comes out, Peoria Regionals might have Pokemon 151 legal. Don't quote me on that, but like, it's going to be a close timeline there.
I'm not 100% sure. I did see that this meta is going to be relevant, though, because Pittsburgh, if you do not know, is coming up soon. That is going to have, I think it was reported, I don't know, because Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it, is down right now, so I can't reference it at the time of this recording, but I think it's like over 1,800 masters have signed up the event. So huge, absolutely crazy, giant event. So there's going to be a lot of people playing, and although Sean and I won't be there, it's going to be very exciting to see what exactly does well in this short, short time with the hype of Charizard, but other decks as well. So Sean, do you just want me to get into the analysis going on right now online lately?
Yeah. What's taking up probably the top spot for you?
So the top spot right now, and I think is something that has got a lot of people excited, it is Giratina Lost Zone Box. This is taking up a little bit over 14% of the meta share in online tournaments, which can give you a pretty good start of meta analysis and things like that. Giratina Lost Box has the most winning deck for sure in this, with a very high win percentage as well. It's taken up like 3.5 more than any other deck in the meta right now. So 14.5% is still a pretty decent share. It's not dominating, but it has a 53.5% win percentage, Sean. That is pretty doggone good. We have seen a lot of Giratina Lost Zone Box. We have seen, you know, the damage output that it was able to produce in the last format before Obsidian Flames. And just goes to show, you know, Star Requiem, especially when decks like Pidgeot and RCSV have 280 HP. That's just a lot of targets for all these Charizard decks, which is the number two popular deck going around in the meta. Seems like it has a pretty good matchup to it, which is one that you definitely want.
I actually, this is something awesome about Limitless that we don't really get into often, but because all their tournaments that have like happened within a format, you can actually go to a specific page for the whole format. And that's what we're using right now. And I clicked into the Lost Box Tina because it is the most popular deck. And the question is, well, is it just being overplayed or does it actually trade really well into most of the decks in the format? Scroll down a little bit and Charizard, like you said, the second most popular deck. 293 matches have been played between the two online, and it has a 62% win percentage against Zard, which is wild. That's huge.
It also, I mean, that again, yes, I agree, huge. I also am curious why it has a 48% win percentage against Giratina Lost Zone Box. I don't know how that math works. But
well, I think that's just like if you are, it's mirror.
Oh, because ties factor. Yeah, ties factor in different in a percentage. I know sports, but anyways, it also has an above 55% win percentage against another popular deck in the format right now. Chin Pao Baxcalibur, 57.5 win percentage. So right there, you are already talking about two of the three most popular decks right now, because in the previous screen, I don't know anybody watching on YouTube or something saw, but for our audio listeners, Chin Pao Baxcalibur was the third most popular deck in the online meta so far. So to have good matchup spreads to those two right there, that is nuts, especially when also in Arceus decks, if you scroll down a little bit more, you have a 62% win percentage against just Arceus. You know, a lot of games, we have talked about this many, many times in previous weeks. In any Arceus matchup, if you just knock out the Arceus, right, before they can use Starbirth, Trinity Charge, whatever, any of those moves, you do a pretty good job winning the game, I feel like. So,
well, the other option with these decks is they play Path to the Peak, right?
Like, yeah.
The reason I wanted to try Path out, because I was like, hey, this seems like a good card. And, you know, while it is not always the best thing for my deck, Lawson Giratina is just like, it's fine. I'm fine with this. This is great. So
the only matchup that it has, I mean, truthfully, there's actually like no matchup that's more than like 10 games that it has less than a 40% win percentage. Its lowest matchup is just regular Lost Zone Box, and we're probably talking about the turbo build that has like the Dragonite and stuff like that.
Yep.
That is 40% flat. So if your worst matchup is 40% flat, especially when, again, like we talked about, the two of the three most popular decks you have a good matchup against.
Yeah.
Wow. It's that's pretty dominant, I feel like, to be honest.
I would say Fusion Strike Mew. It has a slightly losing record as well. It's not anything crazy, but like, you know, those are what, you know, in large numbers at least. Gardevoir, Fusion Strike Mew, and Lost Box are your least favorite matchups. And I think that largely comes down to either in Gardevoir and Lost Box case, it's the prize trade problem, right? Like you have like one or two prizes up, and your opponent has something that you're going to have a hard time killing in Gardevoir EX, or, you know, Fusion Strike Mew with 310, or they're going to go really, really fast if they're Fusion Strike Mew. Like, they might be able to get there before you do, but like you said, nothing is particularly terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, like, that's why Giratina Lost Box, like, if you were going to Pittsburgh, Jake, would you be looking at Giratina Lost Zone? Or is there another deck here that you would be looking at?
I would definitely be looking at Giratina Lost Zone, but that is also with the perspective of, like, I've played that deck a lot, like, before mm-hmm. the Obsidian Flames format. And so I would probably be looking at that deck a little bit. I'm generally curious, to be honest, about Flaffy Maridon. Okay. Really, I've seen some intriguing lists. I've seen some people talk about this. And if you look, at least on Limitless, 62.9% win percentage against Charizard, 57% win percentage against Gardevoir, 68.69% win percentage against Chin Pao Bax Caliber, and a 64.8% win percentage against Single Strike Lugia. So, again, I mean, you have a terrible loss zone, lost box matchup at less than 40%, and your Giratina is also at 41%. But you have some pretty good matchups along the way. So I don't know. Is there a way for... I have done no testing because, again, I'm about to move across the country. But is there, like, a way to make Maridon Flaffy work? Like Seijin Park, right? Mm-hmm. You know, great player, made day two of Worlds and almost made it, you know, top 8, top 16. With Flaffy Maridon, is there something to it, some adjustments that you can make to better help one of those matchups, or maybe even sway one of those matchups, Giratina Lost Box or Lost Zone Box, just a little bit, without having to kill your other, you know, favored matchups? It's a very interesting question that I would try to, like, look at. So that's the deck that I'm most intrigued about.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I think with that deck, you only really, if I'm remembering correctly, because Andrew Mahone also brought Maridon Flaffy
To Worlds. Him to and his Worlds. Group did, yeah.
Yeah. And you only need your ability turn one. Because turn one, you get your ability out, you flood the board, and then
get
you
all
can
your
also...
dudes.
Yeah, and then you mm-hmm. can use Path to the Peak after that, I believe. Like, that's yeah. perfectly acceptable. So it is an interesting... sort of, it's not rogue, obviously, but it's an interesting, I think, sleeper deck that, like, because the Maridon itself ended up being, like, good, but not as powerful, and, like, Chen Pao just feels like a better Maridon in some ways, mm-hmm. but in reality, the Maridon is mostly set up. Your actual attackers in the deck are more likely to be, like, Raikou,
and exactly. maybe, like, the Zeraora in there, you know, there's a lot of different options in this deck. So it's like, that's the one that I would be the most curious about. But I don't know if it would be the best in it.
Yeah, it's...
I've also been having a ton of fun with Lugia, but I don't know if I would be confident enough to take it to an event.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, I'm looking at this list now for our listeners. There's Giratina mm-hmm. Lost Zone Box at the top. Everybody's hyped about Charizard, so that's number two. But... Charizard only has an overall 45% win percentage, so I think people are still figuring the deck out, but it does have a lot of setup, right? Like, mm-hmm. I would say the most popular builds of Charizard are going to play Charizard, Arceus, and Pidgeot. All of that is a lot to get going.
Which pretty much died a Path to the Peak.
Right, all of those, just like, oh, you play Path, turn one? I'll... see myself
all of your
out.
Abilities are gone.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I won't go get something with Arceus turn two. I won't go get something with Pidgeot ever.
I won't accelerate the energies right. to attack with Charizard.
Right. So it's this awkward, like, yeah, it's not great. And you might see, I think a lot more people, because Pidgeot exists, because everybody's like, Pidgeot's going to be great. Pidgeot's an awesome card. And I don't, you know, you and I were both skeptical at first, Jake. But mm-hmm. I think in reality, like, look, if Pidgeot is online, it is one of the best cards in the game. But it can be turned off so easily, and there's a few good decks now that can do that, where I think people are like, you know, maybe we go back to Bibarel. You know?
Maybe. I don't know.
Like, I played a 2-2 line of Bibarel in my Chen Pao deck, and it was dope. It was nice.
It, because that's what it was. That's what it was before with NAIC, right? Chin yeah. Pao and Bibarel was a popular combo together. So it does make sense. It is something that works. I would be curious because, like, the thing about Pidgeot that is real good, and you know, I have much higher thoughts on Pidgeot than when we first talked about it after playing it a bunch in like Charizard decks and stuff. And Chin Pao decks even as well. It's just like, again, like I mentioned, that 280 is a really good number for something like Giratina, right? Which is a huge problem. And I think even with Maridon Flaffy as well, I mean, you're hitting Pidgeot for a weakness. That's a Raikou, right? Just going in there and swinging, you know, no risk attached to it, you know? So it's, there's some interesting, like 280 is not an impossible number compared to the 330 that Charizard puts out.
Yeah. Outside of that, though, I will say, I think Sablezard, Lost Box Charizard, it doesn't have mm-hmm. a good win percentage here. I'm not entirely sure. Maybe it has, like, because of all the path to the peak running around, maybe it has some awkward matchups here and there. But when I played Sebastian, he won a cup the night before, playing, I believe, the same deck. So he went basically back-to-back cup and then challenge win with that deck. So, you know, who knows? But there might be something to going all single prizer. The one that I think that we don't talk about much and I think is constantly overlooked is Inteleon Urshifu.
Oh, so, yeah.
This deck has a 52% win percentage, which isn't amazing, but look, it's positive, right? Gardevoir doesn't have a positive win percentage. Charizard doesn't. So, like, you know, clearly this one's doing something. But I'm trying to see, like, what does it have a particularly good matchup spread against?
And
I'm
like, it has a great matchup spread against Arceus Giratina, right? Okay. 70% win percentage in that matchup. Baxcalibur, 62% win percentage in there. Lost Zone Box, 58%. Percent win percentage. Even something like Giratina Lost Box is at 48. Charizard is at 50. Maridon Flaffy is 54. And I think a lot of what it can do, and I think a lot of the reason why it flies under the radar, is because it is so heavily rewarding on sequence. It can go down so quickly. You have to be able to play so far in advance of damage counters, you know, to be able to yoga loop, to be able to spread those damage counters and take KOs, because, you know, that's what Inteleon does. That's what Urshifu can do as well. So you have to play into those types of things as well. And, you know, especially when you play a deck that has something like Cheryl in it, right? Mm-hmm. Giratina Lost Box, they can only start Requiem one time.
Yeah.
So there's some opportunities in there. And Charizard, one thing that we've seen with Charizard decks is Charizard does not come out of the gate super fast swinging right away. You know, it takes a little bit of time. You got to take some prizes. So I think what Urshifu and Inteleon, I haven't played the matchup at all. This is just all theoretical. I think what it tries to do is it tries to take a bunch of prizes at once and set itself up to where it can take the rest of the prizes, you know, very, very soon after, right? Try to minimize Charizard's damage output in the beginning. Try to rush, sure, if they take a big knockout after you've taken four prizes and yoga looped or whatever, you can take the following two prizes on this, on the turn right after or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think just looking at all of this right now, I don't know if that's the deck to bring to Pittsburgh, to be honest, but mm-hmm. it does seem like a deck that fewer people are going to be thinking about. Nobody's going to be teching for it, I don't think, in any capacity. And you'll have a lot of consistency because of the Rapid Strike engine, right? The Octillery mm-hmm. is no joke. It's like, we talk about how good a variety of other cards are, but Octillery is really good for this deck, and no other deck has that ability to do that. So I think, like, for me, for Pittsburgh, that would be a sleeper pick of, like, I went through and, like, I looked at it, it's, like, good matchups and it's bad matchups, and its bad matchups are not really that bad. So, like, if you're a highly skilled player and you can dodge Fusion Strike Mew, right? And like, you know, that's about it. If you can dodge,
which
Mew,
is
though,
I think pretty much which is pretty much almost what Cyrus Davis did at NAIC, right?
And like, look, Mew is a great deck. But if you're playing Mew, the question you're going to have on your mind at Pittsburgh is like, I want to bring Mew because it's super consistent. You can beat Charizard. But if you actually look, like, Charizard does not have a lot of good matchups. Like, I'm going into the Charizard's win percentage now. But its best matchup, second best. Its best matchup that's, like, super meta is Lugia Archeops for whatever reason. I don't think Lugia Archeops can really reach those numbers easily, so fine. But Fusion Strike Mew is its best matchup at nearly at like 58%. So like, can Mew beat it? Yes. Is it not? Is it going to be fun? No. So like, I don't know. I think that the existence and popularity of Charizard, whether or not it's a top tier deck, might dissuade a not insignificant number of people from playing Mew. So if I'm the Inteleon player, I'm like, okay, that feels like it opens the door for me. I don't have to worry so much. So my thought about bringing that to Pittsburgh.
It's an interesting spot where our meta is at. I would love to see Charizard just win it all, to be honest, because, you know, I think that deck has been like up and down. Oh my God, this deck is so good. But wait, this deck is actually trash. And I would love to just see it win, you know, the tournament right away. And then maybe after that, it just doesn't do as well. I don't know. Maybe I'm trying to meta manipulate and sell off all my Charizards, you know, for Uber amounts of money. Who knows?
Bring back Miss Magius, you cowards.
Don't bring back Miss Magius. No, bring back Belelba and Bryson Man. Come on.
Come on.
And you won't.
You won't come do it, Pokemon.
That's not part of my prediction, but I already gave my predictions for the day. Sean, is there anything else you want to add to the podcast this episode?
No, I think that's it. This is a quick one, a short one, you know.
I'm moving across the country, and not a lot's happening until Pittsburgh. Thank you so much for listening to the Metapod Podcast. Let us know what you think of this episode, and we will look forward to seeing you in the next one. Take care.